Good evening. I'm David Finley, Interim Provost, Vice President for Academic Affairs, as well as Head of Business and Engineering here at Lake Superior State University. And I want to welcome everybody to this event. Louder? Yeah, louder? All right, even louder. All right, I'll put on my teaching voice. Thanks for being here. And I want to extend some thanks to our host this evening, the Schultes Library staff. All the good folks who work here, thanks for making this happen, and even the folks who put the chairs in place. I also want to extend another sincere thanks, and I'm looking in the audience. It was Paul Doozy, who's here tonight, who helped me. Can you wave, Paul? Shout out. All right. Emeritus faculty member, who helped me to make the connection with Mary Ann and Bob Gale. And it's been a delightful afternoon. Such a privilege to have you here with us. I want to tell you a little bit about Ms. Gale. Mary Ann Gale was Procter & Gamble's first female plant manager. You're going to hear all about this. And subsequently, the first female vice president in P&G's manufacturing organization. She worked for P&G for 35 years, and you might even get to hear what her second, third, and fourth career have now been. She's a role model and mentor for women across the U.S. Would you please welcome me, join me in welcoming, there we go, Mary Ann Gale.
Hello, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Now, how many of you have jobs? Raise your hands. Okay, so I can talk to you like you're working, right? Now, I'm also going to talk to you like college students, because I think those are probably the two things that you, the two roles that most of you are in. I think some professors are here, so I'm talking to the kids kind of tonight. Is that okay? Okay. Let me tell you a little bit about me. I already got it. David gave a nice introduction. This will tell you a little bit more about me. I work with Paul, you're one of your professors, when I started my career in Sheboygan, Michigan. And I did that for several years, and then I got transferred around and ended up finishing my career in China. I was the head of product supply for Asia and lived in Guangzhou, China. And I absolutely love China. If you haven't traveled outside the United States, I don't care where you go, go someplace to change your worldview. You know, I was an old lady when I went to China, an older lady now, but my worldview got totally blown out of the water when I went to live in Asia and traveled all over Asia and worked there. And it's just, I always thought I was, you know, willing to embrace every difference, but I learned a whole new level of difference when I moved there. And so I can't tell you enough about traveling and, you know, taking that year off and going to see the world, because it will really change your life. I have three children, wonderful husband, who's in the back with me, my husband of 44 years in June, so we're really happy about that. We have three children and four grandchildren. We just got the grandchildren in the last 2 years, so that's been a totally new experience being grandmother. I will tell you, my husband and I have had a long-distance marriage for about 20 years, and one lived in one place, one lived the other. We got together quite frequently. Our kids all grew up in Michigan and then stayed with me or wherever I was during the off season. And I could talk a lot about long distance marriages. And, you know, everybody thinks, oh, you know, you have everything going for you. Well, long distance marriages are really difficult because you're there by yourself with kids, or you're there by yourself and, you know, you're not going to parties with your spouse. There's just a lot of things about them, but there's a lot of good things too. So if that's something you're interested in, and after this is over with, or maybe in a few days, you want to talk about that, I'd be more than happy to talk to you about it. My second career was was an author, coach, and a speaker. When I came back from China, I thought, oh my God, I came back to Sheboygan, Michigan. I thought, what a mistake this is. You know, what am I going to do in Sheboygan, Michigan? And so I decided I was going to write a book and start speaking. And I did that. I wrote a book. I have some copies of it here if you're interested in it. And I started speaking, and I did that for several years. I'm still doing it, but not very much. I just kind of do it gratis now. And then I decided, well, this isn't really filling me up. I need to do something else. So I ran for township supervisor. You know, great experience, major mistake. I mean, major mistake. I can't tell you, you know, how politics are in little towns, but they are very difficult to work. So I did that. I did not run again this year. So I would have been, I did my 4 years. I gave at the bank, and now I'm finished. But it was a wonderful experience for me. And then the last thing I've done is, I'm doing right now, is my husband owns businesses on Mackinac Island. Have you ever, anybody been to the Butterfly House and Insect World? Yay! Look at them all right there, him, Bob. Well, next time you go, tell them that you know us and we'll get you in free. We'll have to tell the people at the desk that I said that. So they'll know. Just say that you were at the speaking engagement. Anyway, so my son was working with my husband, and he said he didn't want to work anymore. And Bob says, what are we going to do? And I said, well, I'll start, you know, I'll work the gift shop. So now I'm the purchaser, and I run kind of the gift shops that we have. We have two of them on the island, and that is a lot of fun. It's really been just a totally different mindless experience for me, and I'm just enjoying every minute of it. So that's kind of what I am. I'm also being a super grandmother. This is a picture of my family, and I won't take it a long time, but on this side is my daughter, Elizabeth, that lives in China. Her husband is on the other side, Carl, who is she's a principal of American International School in Shanghai. She's been in Shanghai for 12 years. And her husband runs internet companies. He has several of them. My oldest daughter, Catherine, right here, this was at a wedding, she's a lawyer in Chicago, and her husband is an FBI agent. So if you ever wonder what one looked like, there's a picture of him. And he's buffed in that, you know, he's a head marksman, I think. My son, John, is right over there. He's a salesman for a construction company, and his wife, Alina, this was at their wedding, is a physician's assistant. There's Bob and I. And this is a very dear family friend, Wadey, who retired from Abbott Labs. And she's been with our family for a long time. So that's my number one priority right there. And if we had four little kids in there, you'd see the next priority. So let's get into my talk. The number one premise of this talk, and if you take nothing away from it but this, is nobody, absolutely nobody, cares more about your career than you do. Now, I'm going to have somebody say, oh, no, you know, my boss cares about my career. Well, he does, or she does. But they don't care about, they care about their career first, and then they care about your career. They don't care about it more. And I can give you 100 examples of this, where in life, managers will keep somebody working for them for a long period of time because they're doing such a fantastic job. And they won't give them the opportunity to advance or to move to a different place. Why is that? Because they don't want to lose you. They don't want you to go someplace else. They want you to continue to make them look good. Now you're going to say, Marianne, this is a horrible awakening. I know my boss cares about me. I'm not telling you they don't. I'm telling you that nobody, your boss, anybody that you can think about, even your mom and dad, care more about you than you care about yourself. And when you get to be a parent, you'll learn that. Your kids, you can do everything you want to help your kids. Like some of you are here because you had to be here. I hope you enjoy it. But that's how you got here, you know, and it's because your bosses or your professors or whatever care about you. But they don't care more about you than you care about yourself. And that's the key. That's the key. You've got to know how great you are. You've got to know how good you are. You've got to know that nobody's better than you in whatever it is that you want to do. So if you take nothing away from this presentation, is this. Nobody cares more about you than you care about yourself. So let's talk about that. Are people-based rewarded based only on merit? How many think they are? You're based, oh my goodness, such a smart group. Then how many, everybody else thinks that they're not rewarded on something else other than merit. Then what is it? What is it that they reward on? What do you think? You were shaking your head, right? What do you think that one of the things would be? Performance? Good. What's another thing that people reward at besides performance?
Helping
yeah.
Length of service.
Length of service? Yeah, good. What, who was that speaking?
How they get along with others.
Yeah, how they get along with other people. What else? About anybody think about who you know? Yeah, who you know? Who knows you? Right? My son, I used to say, you know, it's who knows, it's who you know, and he goes, oh no, Mom, it's who knows you. And he's right. It's not who knows me, it's who knows you. That's right. That's the reality. The reality is, and you may not like this, and you may think this is really bad, but this is really the facts. The reality is that the workplace, and I say it's not just the workplace, I say it's the university, I say it's the school board, I say it's everything, is a democracy. And that means that everybody has a vote. Every day you can vote for, you know, for you to get ahead or for somebody else to get ahead. So let me tell you what I mean by this. And I'm going to talk a lot about this because the number one thing I think about life is relationships. And the way you get ahead in your career and the way you get ahead in life is relationships. So if I meet you and we have an exchange, immediately we're having, you've made a judgment about me and I've made a judgment about you. That can either give you a positive vote or it can give you a negative vote. Two weeks later, I'm in a meeting and we're talking about who should be the next director of accounting. We go around the table and everybody says, oh, I think, you know, Joe would be a good candidate, you know, probably Susie would be one. So everybody gets their names out there, and pretty soon somebody will say, well, you know, I saw Susie in a presentation. I didn't think she was really that sharp. I don't think this is really the right job for her. Somebody else says, you know, me too. Immediately, Susie, who I had only seen one other time, let's just say, doesn't have the votes and doesn't win. It's as simple as that. People think, you know, when it gets to really making decisions, it becomes the relationships that you have with the people that you're with. They will make very quick relationship decisions. Now, the other thing I want to tell you about this is that these are face-to-face relationships. In today's world of the internet and Facebook and, you know, tweets and all this other stuff, those are great. But if you really want to get a job and you really want to get ahead in the job that you have, or you want to get a good grade in a small university like this, you have such an intimate relationship with your professors. But if you don't, then you should. Because that relationship that you have will always give you the benefit of the doubt. Especially if it's a good relationship. Because why? What are voters looking at? They're looking at how you study the issues. So how have you studied to prepare to talk to them? How, you know, what is your thought process? What are things that you're interested in? So if I'm a voter, I'm going to look for people that have common things and think the way that I do, or people that will challenge me to think differently in a way that I can hear it. Do you know what I'm saying? So that's one thing. The second one is voters compare candidates. I don't want you to think that just because you have a relationship, you know, that person may have a relationship with somebody else, and they're going to compare you. So you want to continue to have a very strong relationship because they're always comparing. Voters decide who's going to best represent their interests. So if you're going to get my vote, I want to know that you are going to represent the way that I think or the way that you know that I would speak up in a meeting, or you know how things that interest me. So definitely you want to be thinking about these people that are going to vote for you and understand what their interests are. And unfortunately, the reason that we have had such a difficult time getting women to get to top places in this country in CEO positions is because voters, by and large, have been mostly men, white men. And the white men, and I do the same, white men vote for white men because they're similar. They don't have any differences. They don't see any differences in men. Women, on the other hand, are very different. We're beautiful. We're sexy. We're attractive, right? We're smart. We're intuitive. Men see a few things in women first. Men cannot tell you what you were wearing the day before, but they can tell you what your butt looks like or your hair or whatever part of the body that they're attracted to, right? You all know that, women? Women, on the other hand, we judge everything. So there's a group of women out there that have already, like, we'll just take me as an example. Oh my goodness, I wonder why she's wearing those shoes. Or she shouldn't wear that, you know, her hair that way. Or it's a very judgmental, right? Isn't that right? So men it's very difficult for women to bring other women forward because of that judgment thing we got going on. Men, on the other hand, will be attracted to, they'll bring men forward first, and then they'll bring attractive women forward second. Right, guys? Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that nod, because you're an honest fellow. Then they may get down into understanding, you know, are you smart? Have you delivered? Can you get the results? Whatever. Now, this may be very frustrating for women. And I just want to say to women, it is frustrating because you're always competing against, a force that you can't have anything to do. You know, it's hard for you to change. But what you can do is you can start building those strong relationships with these voters. Now, I didn't tell you who the voters are in a workplace, and I really want to make sure I do that. There are three groups of voters in a workplace. And the first person is your boss, right? And your boss makes you think that that boss is the most important person. The boss usually doesn't make the decisions. It's usually the boss's boss. You got me? The boss's boss makes the decisions. And the boss's peers are the third group. Because when they're sitting around that table deciding who's going to get the job or who's going to get the next promotion or who's going to get whatever, that's the group that makes the decision. The boss, the boss's boss, and the boss's peers. So when you're thinking about creating relationships with people, those are the three groups of people that you create relationships with in the workplace. Now, if you're thinking about creating relationships in other venues, then you find out who those decision makers are, whether it's at the university, whether it's, you know, on the school board, whatever it is, you know, gymnastics or any sporting event, this voting process is all the same. It's everywhere. It's everywhere you go. And you are a voter too. I mean, it's both ways. If you're in one of these positions, you become a voter. And so you can start to help people understand how that voting process works. Okay, I talked about the key of strong relationships. So let me talk about how you do it. Relationships, I can't tell you enough about relationships, because you don't have to like a person to have a relationship. You just have to respect the person. So there are, I cannot tell you how many bosses in my career I didn't like personally. Now, they weren't unethical or they weren't immoral. Those are important. If that's an issue, you do something about it. But if they're just a jerk, and we've all had those kind of bosses, you just have to respect that they got to be the boss, and you try to find what is the good about them. I'm a big believer in everybody has something good to give. And if you can find what that good is, then that's what you respect them for, right? You don't have to worry about all the other junk. You don't have to obsess on all the other stuff. Just think about the stuff they're great at. And then honor them and respect them for that. And use them for that. So the first thing you want to do is you want them to know who you are. You know, you want to make sure that you have the tools and the techniques to have them know who you are. One thing you might have heard about, if you haven't in one of your classes, you definitely should think about this, especially if you're going to graduate, is what's your elevator talk? Have you ever heard that discussion? What's the talk you're going to have when that person is in the elevator with you, or you meet them in the hallway, and you've been dying to meet them? So if I happen to see Donald Trump tomorrow, I know exactly what I tell him about me, you know, and what I think probably about him, which is good. I'm not bad. I think the good things about him. So, but that's the point. You want to know what you're going to say and tell people who you are. And never be. Everybody thinks people that are in positions of power are too busy. How many of you would never go up to the president and talk to him just out of the clear blue? Would anybody everybody would do that here because it's a small school? You wouldn't. Okay, right. And you wouldn't probably because you think he's too important and too busy, right? And I'm not really worthy. You know, I'm just such a low person. I couldn't be worthy. See, that's one of the things you've got to get rid of. Remember? Nobody's more important and cares about you than you care about yourself, right? So if you don't talk to people you really need to talk to make those connections, what a missed opportunity. So you've got to let people know who you are, and you've got to not be afraid to come up and talk to people. Tell them how you're feeling, what you're thinking, who you are. You know, I'm Sally Ann from the biological, you know, team. And I'm working on this project, and boy, we need some more money on that lab equipment. You know? He knows who you are. You spoke out. You did it in a short few minutes. Have your speech ready. And then let people know what you want. Here's the biggest problem, I think, for all of us, is that sometimes we don't know, but most of the time, we don't let it out to the universe. You know, I'm a big believer of say what you want, and it's amazing how quickly it comes back. I want to work at Disney. Well, put it out there. I bet you within 7 people, you'll know somebody who works at Disney. And we can make those connections happen. So just put out what you want and let people know about it. Don't sit back and wait, because it'll never happen if you sit back and wait, because nobody knows. So put out there what you want. Show people what you're capable of accomplishing. You know, this is not about just, you know, patting people on the back. People that go up and build relationships do it because they have something that they can give. They've accomplished something great, or they're smart, or they'd like to accomplish something great. So let people know that. Let them know what you've done. Brag about yourself. You know, again, maybe your professor will brag. It's interesting. We're hiring right now for the Butterfly House, and Bob was talking to one of the assistants or the dean or somebody today, and we have a very good relationship with the people at Michigan State, and we got a note from a lady at Michigan State who's a professor, and she was talking to our manager about one of the students. And she said, you know, did she apply? Because she is so smart. She's so good. She does this. She does that. She went on and on. And then our manager said, well, what about this guy? He applied. And she went, well, you know, I'm not sure about him. And, you know, it was really interesting to see how the relationships between these students and these professors played out in recommendations to us for a summer job. It works. It really works. They really want to know. They want to take people that have accomplished something and send them out to these businesses, so they businesses will continue to get people, and they'll give money to the university, and that whole thing goes on. So build relationships with people that can teach you the most. This is a really key one. You know, a lot of times we build relationships with people that are like us. But in the workplace, you want to build relationships with people that are different than you are, that have different skills, because that's how you grow. You know, one of my strengths in business is I always surrounded myself with people that were so different from me, because I knew they would make me better. If I had surrounded myself with people that were like me, I would never be where I was in P&G. You know, I was head of global manufacturing for Procter & Gamble, and I have a retailing degree. Doesn't that tell you something? I mean, I was head of the supply chain for Asia with a retailing degree. But there is not anybody that didn't work for me that wasn't smart at what they did. And one of the things I did when I first started at P&G, I was a team manager on the line, and we rotated shifts. And I didn't know anything about engineering, and I know I was a risk for the plant manager to hire me, but he said, you know, you are just so positive. I just think you can do a good job. And I said, I'll do the best job I possibly can. So I met this crotchety old mechanic. His name was Jack Seaman. You remember him, Paul? Oh, my God, this guy. They said he was the best mechanic in the whole place. And I went to him, and I said, hey, I got this job on this. They called these different teams. You know, they had these different teams. I was the team manager, the C team, the C crew animals, they called it, or something. I mean, they were bad guys. And so I said to Jack, hey, I got the C team, and I don't know anything about right angle gearboxes, drive shafts, nothing. See, I know all that stuff now because this guy taught me. On Saturday mornings, he and I went into the shop area, and we went through all these motors, what they did. You know, he tested me back and forth on them. I mean, we worked for Saturday after Saturday after Saturday on the learning this stuff. And the thing he taught me is when I could know it was a raw material defect, you know, problem that was being caused by the raw material, or when I knew it was a mechanical one. Now, I didn't know it all the time, but you know how long it took for people to know that Jack Seaman was teaching me? About 2 minutes. The whole place knew it, and nobody messed with me. Well, some of them, but not. You know what I'm saying? Not many of them mess with me. That's how you learn. That's how you take advantage of people that can teach you. Find the person that you don't know something about, and go to them. Another technique of this is that when you're in the workplace, and let's say you're working on a project, you're designing something, and you have to go and do something you've never done before, but this other person has done it. You go talk to that person, especially if it's one of the decision makers, the boss, the boss's boss, or the boss's peers, and say, hey, I understand you're the best strategist in the place, and I've got to create this strategy. Could you help me? That people value that. They like being valued. People like having you come and talk to them and ask them for their ideas. That's how you gain respect and admiration. So definitely something you should do. And the last one is build relationships with people that can advocate for you. Do you know what I mean by that? You want to build relationships, well, with all kinds of people, but most importantly, the people that have the decision-making power to get you the job or to get you the promotion or to get you the raise or whatever. So make sure that you have a good relationship with those decision-makers and make sure they can advocate for you. A lot of people say to me, well, Marianne, if I have a great relationship with all the people that work for me, can't they advocate for you? They can. They can. But it's harder advocating from the bottom up than from the top down. So just a word of advice. Okay. I'm not going to talk a whole bunch more, but I am going to just talk a minute about these myths because I think they're really important. It's selfish to work on my own network and relationship. Well, it is if you believe that. But we know that nobody cares more about our career than we do. So it's not selfish. It's a big myth. You really should work on building relationships. It's not selfish at all. It's a waste of time to network. Well, if you think that, I can guarantee you're not going to go anywhere in your career. Because networking and building relationships is key to success. If I have any free time, I need to work on things for my immediate work. Always take time to invest in yourself. I spent a bunch of time with my daughter recently talking about that because she's a lawyer. She's super busy. She's going for partner this year, and she just is not taking time for herself. And I just said to her, you know, you have got to spend time taking care of yourself first, and then your work is going to follow. It's going to make you're going to be healthier for that. People who network are just trying to be the teacher's pet. No, you may think that because you're afraid to network, you're afraid to get out there. They're not the teacher's pet. They're much smarter than you are if you're thinking this. And a good relationship system is a natural result of time spent at work. No way. Time spent at work is in a competitive environment. You're not building relationships of trust and confidence in a competitive environment if you just spend it at work. You've got to take the time to be strategic about your relationships. If I just do a good job, my boss will take care of you. Yep, he'll keep you in the job for a long time because you're taking such good care of him. All these things make sense to you? Good. Okay. Another thing, just, and you can read these. I just want to talk one thing here, and that's about feedback. You know, one thing I think we all kind of get defensive about intuitively is getting feedback. You know, it's like, I don't want to know I'm doing a bad job because, for me, I was raised as the oldest of 10 children, and I was the role model in our family, right? That's my job. I've got to be perfect. I've got to set the example. I've got to do this. Are there any be-perfects in the room? No be-perfects? So there's one, two, three, four. Okay, slowly. Do you guys know what be-perfect means? You can't make a mistake. You really got to get all A's. You've got to, you know, do... Anybody else have that? Any of these students have to be perfect? None of you. Oh, my goodness. That's an... Oh, here's one. I see one. Well, be perfect. When you have that, sometimes it's hard to take feedback because you've worked so hard trying to do the very best that you possibly can. And one of the things that I want to think about for you for feedback is think about it as a gift. That if you get a relationship with somebody built on trust in a relationship, they're giving you a gift when they're giving you feedback. And so take it that way. The other thing about feedback is you don't have to act on it, but thank the person and take it. And if you don't want to act on it, it doesn't matter. But if you do want to act on it, you can. That's the point of it. If it's feedback at work, then you need to decide how much you want to act on it. Because sometimes they'll give you feedback just to give you feedback. And I'm going to talk about that next. I'm not going to go through this. I'm going to talk about this part of it. If you want to get elected to whatever it is, the first thing you have to do is look at the skills that you need to develop. And I say this, you know, you come out of college, you're going to have a set of skills. You've got a set of skills from all your work experiences. What you need to do is you need to figure out what are the skills that you really are outstanding at. And you can do that in a lot of ways. There's StrengthFinder. There's all kinds of different mechanisms to help you. But you want to find out what it is that you're great at. You want to focus on your strengths. You do not want to focus on what's wrong with you unless it's a fatal flaw for your work. Okay, now let me tell you what I mean by that. I'll give you an example. If you were going to want to be a public speaker, let's say you wanted to be a political advisor, and you were a stutterer, that would probably be a fatal flaw. I don't think I would go into that field. But if you were if you wanted to be a public speaker or a public advisor, and your grammar needed some improvement, I don't think that's a fatal flaw. I think it's something you need to work on, but it's not a fatal flaw. Do you understand the difference? So if you're getting feedback that is just about something that is not that important, but it's something that you could fix, you can decide whether to work on it or not. Here's what I mean about focusing on your strengths in that case. Don't spend a lot of time focusing on the little things that don't make a difference. Focus your time on your strengths that will make you stronger. The stronger you are in what you're great at, the better you will be. Every great person that anybody you know, just think about them. They have a strength that just stands out. You just know what it is that they're strong at. They don't spend a bunch of time focusing on the things that they're not strong at. And I'll give you an example for me. Through my whole career, I got the feedback that you move too fast. You see the vision and you go too fast. And people can't follow you. Now, I thought that was that's a great strength, that I can see where I want to go. I can see where I want to take the team. And I go. Sometimes I do go too fast. But you know what? I've never taken that feedback and stopped going. Do you know, you understand what I'm saying? I've taken that feedback, I might have slowed down a little bit, tiny little bit, but I kept going. And the reason is, I didn't want my strengths to get neutralized. I wanted my strengths to grow and be powerful. Because that's what got me in my career. That's what I'm bringing to my career, is that ability to see and go. Do you understand what I'm saying? So if you listen to all that negative feedback and you spend time on that feedback, you really take away from the time that you should spend developing, like, your leadership skills, let's say. That's your strength. Then you want to know about leadership skills in situational leadership. You want to know about strategic leadership. You want to know about all the different leadership skills. That's what you would develop. Does that make sense to you? So don't focus, minimize or neutralize the things, the feedback, the negatives, unless it's a fatal flaw, and only focus on your strengths. The other thing you can electify is great business results. I don't ever want to ever undermine the importance of great business results, or whatever results it is that you're getting. You have to be good at what you do, because people won't support you. I'm not going to go in to one of those roundtables where we talk about who's going to get the next job for somebody that I have a question mark about. And you know why? Because I'm putting my name on that promotion. When I recommend so-and-so, that's me putting my name out there. And I don't want somebody to come back to me and say, boy, that person that you gave me, were you just trying to get him off your team or what? You know, because they'll never take my recommendation again. So I have to give recommendations with somebody that I really trust has the skills and capability to do the job. That's why you build the relationships. That's why people have to see what you can do. You want to build and build and build so people can understand that it's okay to put your name out there because you're going to deliver. People did that for me, and you know that's what I'll do for others. And the other thing I want to just talk about is the footprint. I think this goes back to my whole thing about strength. You know, every time you leave a job or leave the school or leave a classroom, you leave a footprint. You leave your mark. And that, whether you know it or not, right now in this room with this kind of a university, I could ask you to give feedback to everybody in here, one little word, and you could probably do it. Because you watch their body language, you see them in class, you whatever. That's because you leave them your footprint. Oh, she's a positive kid. You know, always has something to say. Never speaks up. Seems kind of shy and reserved. Right? So one of the things you want to think about in your life is what kind of a footprint are you leaving and where are you leaving it? And what are people thinking about you? A great thing to do sometime in even a small classroom, you know, would be to have 10 of you give each other on a post-it note, what is your strength? What do you see as their strength? You put it, you just sit in a circle, and you put it on the back of the chair. When they're finished, they read all the post-it notes. You would be amazed how many of these are similar because of how people see you. You know, we think we're kind of hiding behind things. We're right out there. You know, and a lot of people can see us. And that's something really important for you to think about for yourself. What kind of footprint are you leaving? Okay. I want to see what the time is because I'll finish up here. The last thing I want to just talk about, and you guys are, most of you are so young, but some of the older professors and people in the room, you know, the question you'll get sometime in your life is, what does success mean? And there's a lot of people, if you talk to your mom and dads or people that here that can identify with this, a lot of times success gets kind of thrown at you. Like, what's success in college? 4 point, right? Or top of your class or, you know, whatever. It's something that has to do with the grading system or getting a fellowship or whatever. You know, in most workplaces, success is getting a promotion. It's a title. So people get sucked into this concept of what is success by the social norms of the organization that you're in. I don't buy that. I buy you've got to define your own success. You know, if I had to define success as my family first, I might have made all kinds of different decisions in my life. But I did. Family, my husband, I'd say my kids, my husband, you know, and me. I mean, I didn't have time. I used to play tennis in college. When I got out of college and started having kids, I stopped playing tennis. Why? Because I couldn't be good at it. If I didn't practice 5 times a week, I couldn't be good at tennis. But no, I stopped tennis. I stopped having a lot of girlfriends because I had babies. I couldn't do that anymore. I couldn't go out to the bars every night. You know, as much as everybody else was doing it, I couldn't do it if I wanted to get ahead. So, but it's because you define what success means to you. And not this lofty thing, but write down, you know, really, really what it means to you. Once you define that, then live your life that way. And it changes over time. I mean, success now, as I'm retired, is different than when I was young and coming up in the corporate world. But for sure, if I hadn't defined it and knew what it was, I think I could have gone easily, got sucked into, you know, the keeping up with the whatever the social norm was. You know, it's like keeping up with the Joneses. You've all heard that. It's real. This thing, the pressure of some of that is real. And I hope that what you'll do is think about what does success really mean to me, so that you make decisions relative to that, and make those decisions success with you and your spouse. You know, those are, you just can't make them by yourself if you're in a marriage situation. Okay, I'm just going to share one thing, and then I'm going to tell you, I have these up here, but one of the, this probably won't help you right now, but it was, has been such a help to a lot of people, is creating a long-term plan. I'm all about planning, you know. We had an earthquake in our Japanese plant in Osaka, and no, it was Kobe. We had a Japanese earthquake in Kobe, and the Japanese worked for 2 weeks doing nothing but planning on how they were going to get the equipment up and running. After the second week, they put their plan into effect, and the equipment was up in a week and a half. So, you know, the power of planning is just—it's just incredible. And you know this yourself too. If you plan something out and you think about it, then it gets executed. If you go in it kind of half-cocked, it doesn't usually turn out as well as you want. So what I've created is a map, and you can get this on, I have it on my internet. It's a career map, and basically what you do, this is it. First of all, you identify what your strengths are, your skills, and then the key relationships you need to build. And you do that for every job, and you do it for the next 3 jobs that you want. So once you get in the workplace, for some of you, this is a little premature, but you could use the same planning process for getting a job or for what committees you want to be on or what things you want to get in school. It's got multiple uses, and it's all flexible. You can use it any way you want to. And the life stuff is at the bottom. So I have, you know, how old are you? Where do you live? Where does your spouse live? Where do their parents live? You know, in different cultures, they've used this very differently. Like in China, they have to know when their parents are going to be, you know, in their 60s, because the kids have to go and take care of the parents when the parents get older. So they want to be building their career and where they move depending on where their parents are. I mean, just, it's, that's a cultural thing, but you'll always find their parents' name at the bottom of this, because they, and what age is their parents, and when they will be, what age. Same with, for kids, and when they'll be in school, and when people want to move, and when they don't want to move. So it's a very, very good tool, and I've got a whole bunch of them up here if you want to just take them and look at them. And then this is how, in a career one, this is how it gets filled out. You have the job, you have the role, the skills, the relationships, and the strengths, and you do that for every job you have. The other power of this tool is that once you have it, and this is pretty big, but you can get it in a small, when you're going to talk to people about what you've done and what you want to do, you can see it in a picture. And people love that. I mean, I've had so much feedback on people using this tool and, you know, getting the feedback and taking it, or having it on a plane, or having it in their pocket. And it used to be we'd fly on planes and we'd sit next to people and talk to them, and you'd always, you know, pick out something like this and share it. A lot of jobs come out of those plane rides. So I'd like to encourage you to think about developing a map or any kind of a tool that you can use to develop a life map for yourself. Share it with the people that are important in your life, because if you don't share it, remember, nobody's going to know what you want to put out to the universe. Use it to build relationships, so people you don't know, you could use it for that. And then the last thing, don't hesitate to ask for what you want, because if you ask for what you want, you'll be surprised how many times you get it. Here's my email, my home, and my cell phone, and I feel like, you know, anytime I could help, if you have a specific issue or something you're dealing with, I'd be more than happy to talk to you or email you back and forth. I do have time. I'm not that important. I really love to help kids and adults, anybody I can, especially as they think about job searching or careers, or maybe I know somebody that can even help you. So with that, I will take any questions that anybody might have. Not a question. Yeah. Is about to speak.
Thank you. By the way, anybody who hasn't come see me, I'm happy to have a conversation with you.
Yay!
I'm curious as to what you would say in terms of your college experience contributed to the skills that allow you to build relationships in the workplace. What courses, what experiences, what part of your college experience created skills for you that led to the ability to develop the kinds of relationships you talked about?
Well, I have to say, I'm not sure it happened in college. I think I had my parents kind of drilled into me the importance of every individual, of valuing every individual from the time I was a child, especially my mother. And my mother, we lived next to Michigan State. So I told you we had 10 kids. My mother would have foreign exchange students who didn't have any place to go come to our house for Christmas, Thanksgiving, I mean, everything. So early in my career, you know, I learned the importance of having to talk and get to know people. I think in college, it was probably all the jobs I had. You know, Unlike you, many of you, it's so expensive for college. Well, when I was going to college, it was expensive in my time, but I worked two or three jobs. And one job was at a Catholic student center. One job was at IHOP, International House of Pancake. Oh, man, that was a bad job. The night shift, right next to Coral Gables Bar, it was bad. No tips, it was really bad. But so I think it was probably not a class. I was a forensic. I did debate in high school. I did forensics in high school. So I think it, probably those kinds of things. And my mother always told me, you know, you can do anything you want to do. You know, and that's what I think gave me the self-confidence that got me my first job with Homer Bullard, who was the plant manager. You know, I think that was it. I knew my mom. My mother was a pilot. She could fly a plane. Can you imagine that? Back in, you know, a long time ago. She had to give up flying when she had her 10 kids. But my dad was a horseman. We had a horse in our backyard. And he gave that up when he started having a bunch of kids. But I don't know. I didn't have a college course. I really have to be honest. I think it was just exposure to getting out and doing stuff and just